You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. If you missed your favorite program, don't worry. You can listen to podcasts of our program at cjsf.ca.
Making contact.
Welcome to Making Contact. I'm Salima Hamrani, and today we are re-airing a piece by producer Lucy Kang about art from within women's prisons. And that's because you can catch The Only Door I Can Open, the exhibition featured in today's show starting February 1st. And you can also catch If I Give You My Sorrows, the dance performance that starts today's show from January 31st to February 1st at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Check out the show links on our website after the show. Here's Lucy Kang.
In a dark warehouse space, dancers dressed in blue tank tops and shorts cradle small wooden beds. They move the beds around their bodies, pressing their faces into them at one point. The movements seem both intimate and melancholy. It's October 2023, and I'm watching a dance performance in San Francisco called If I Give You My Sorrows from Flyaway Productions. And the bed will show up again and again in different positions and sizes. For an hour, performers will dance with and around beds, small ones and large ones, and one that swings through the air as they twist and glide around it. But these are not just any beds. These beds are meant to evoke prison beds.
So the piece used the beds as a physical and metaphoric frame to look at the experience of women who are currently incarcerated.
This is Joe Kreider, artistic director of Flyaway Productions and the creative director of If I Give You My Sorrows.
I've been working with artists and people who are incarcerated since 2017. So with this piece, we asked the women, how is your bed an antidote to your prison experience?
Joe knows what it's like to have had an incarcerated loved one. She's created an entire series of work around the experiences of incarcerated people, including three site-specific productions in the Decarceration Trilogy. And for this show, she interviewed currently and formerly incarcerated women, sometimes for hours.
And I asked them, tell me about a bed. Tell me about your prison bed. What is a secret that only your bed knows about you? Tell me about your childhood bed. Tell me about your ideal bed. And from those questions emerged a picture of both the struggle of being in prison and the ways that women, or the women we spoke to at least, adapt.
Those words were then incorporated into some of the music composed for the performance, like this piece that includes the voice of formerly incarcerated trans activist Lisa Strawn.
This is Lisa Strawn. I'm a trans woman, and I recently was paroled after 25 years. From San Quentin, I can't even begin to tell you the fear, not just myself, but everyone else had every day.
The bed is portrayed as a kind of repository for deeply private feelings and thoughts. To me, it feels like this idea of the bed challenges the ways that the prison industrial complex dehumanizes the people inside, where incarcerated human beings are often euphemistically referred to in budgets as beds. Art, though, can show the human beings inhabiting those beds, whether through dance, visual art, or the written word. It has the power to reveal what's hidden. It can peel back the layers of censorship that are inherent to incarceration. One of the people Joe Kreider interviewed for the dance performance was Betty McKay, also known as Ms. Betty. Ms. Betty was formerly incarcerated and started off as an advocate inside prison.
I was incarcerated for 27 years. And that is a lot. particularly for women, because we are at the bottom of the totem pole for everything. I became a voice inside because we didn't have voices. And it's hard to get people to stand up to the system when you're inside because of retaliation. If you try to address an issue or you try to bring light to something, you could end up like in another prison, way away from your children, your loved ones, everything.
Joe approached Miss Betty about contributing to the dance piece.
And she was just like, Betty, I want you to tell your story and we're going to do it into dance. And I was like, what? My story? And she was like, yes, you have a story. And so I just, I showed up at the studio. They put me in a booth. They asked me a million questions. I answered as authentically as I could. It got emotional at times. Just the memories of some of the things that I went through touched me. I didn't know that I still had triggers to things from my incarceration, but I did. And a lot of that came through in the dance, and you heard me saying the words. When I heard them, I got emotional at the performance. My bed now, when I came home, my bed now is the antidote for a lot of things. I look at my room now and I be like, thank you, Lord, thank you. Rubbing my body on those satin sheets. My bed now. My bed is a confidant. Satin sheets.
Wow. I mean, I just remember when I was watching the performance, I being so struck by your words in particular. And I went back through and listened to it again before this interview. And just, you know, the words and the music, and I think the emotion, you know, really, really comes through in that section. And there's a line where you say something like, my bed now, when I came home, is an antidote to a lot of things. And I'm just wondering, could you describe what you meant by that?
Oh, I don't know why. I'm just like almost crying right here, right now, thinking of that. Because what I know to be true is that the bed, it was like I never really thought about my bed. But my bed was like the only place that I could be like totally authentic with myself. Like I could cry in my bed, because even though I was someone in the prison that everyone looked for to solve problems and to make things happen and to do different things, every day wasn't a good day for me. But I couldn't be like that outside of that bed. That bed is the only place that I could be alone with myself and my thoughts.
27 years. It was hard, very hard. 27 years.
And every day,
and just lie there. It was hard, very hard,
very hard. Very hard. Just like to encourage people to take the time to reimagine who and what incarcerated people are and what they can do and what they're capable of. Because what I know to be true is that what I did to be in prison isn't who I am. It's what I did. Everyone has a story, and you don't know me unless you know my story. So you can't judge me unless you know my story.
This project made me reconsider what my bed means to me, which I hadn't thought of much before. It made me think of how the bed as an object, this piece of furniture I use every day that's made specifically for my rest, holds so much intimacy and care. But that also makes the absence of the system of care in prisons and other carceral facilities so stark in comparison.
It was hard in there. In some days, was harder than others. And some days that bed was comforting. And so it's like everything that I went through, everything that I was feeling in my heart, in my soul, could only be shared with my bed. And when I came home, once I got a job and had a little bit of money and was able to get a little bit of credit, the bed was the first thing I bought. That was the first thing I bought for myself after 27 years of incarceration, was the bed. And right now today, that bed still means the same thing to me.
I'm just jumping in to remind you that you're listening to Making Contact. If you like today's show and want more information, or if you'd like to leave us a comment, visit us at our new website, focmedia.org. There you can access today's show and all of our prior episodes. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Making Contact. I'm Lucy Kang. Earlier on today's show, we heard about a dance performance highlighting the experience of women who are incarcerated and the complex ways they relate to their beds. In the next half of the show, we're going to look more closely at a related art exhibition and what it tells us about how people outside prison walls, including those who are formerly incarcerated, can support and uplift the voices of women inside. The question that Joe Kreider built the dance performance around was, how is your bed an antidote? And that question was also used as a prompt for a visual art and poetry exhibition called The Only Door I Can Open, featuring work from artists and writers inside Central California Women's Prison, or CCWF, in Chowchilla. The exhibition, like the dance piece, was a collaboration between Empowerment Avenue, the Museum of the African Diaspora, and Flyaway Productions. Two women currently inside that prison curated and contributed to The Only Door I Can Open. You'll hear their voices in the rest of the episode. They were recorded on calls made from inside prison, and as you'll be able to tell, the prison phones don't have the best quality. And you'll also hear how that quality changes depending on which recording we used. Here's one of the exhibition's curators, writer and poet Tamikia Johnson.
You know, we all have to process a really abstract question that some of us probably never considered, and that was, you know, what is our bed? A woman's bed here is much more than where she puts pajamas on, goes to sleep, wakes up. You know, it's so much more than that.
Artist and writer Chantel Jeanette Black is the other curator. She's been a painter since before she was incarcerated.
So for a lot of us, our bed was that sanctuary, which is expressed either in poetry or through visual art. And so we kind of like got to expose that suppression through how we are under constant surveillance. We're always exposed in our most vulnerable moments.
When it first launched, The Only Door I Can Open was shown in a gallery space near the dance performance venue in San Francisco. Paintings, drawings, and works with poetry hung on the walls. And what stood out to me was just how differently the artists responded to the question about their beds. One of the pieces on display was a poem Tamikia wrote called My Bunk Bed as an Antidote. This poem is where the title of the exhibition came from. Here's an excerpt recorded in her voice from within the prison.
I've been giving it some thought about how the only door I can open in prison is an invisible one leading to my bunk bed. It calls me when it wants and needs me. Sometimes it betrays my insomnia, giving me a few drips of sleep.
I want to turn now to look at what it took for Tamikia and Chantel to curate the show from inside prison. One of the first steps was finding other incarcerated artists to work with. That wasn't easy because of the restrictions placed on them by the prison. Plus, the planning process took place during COVID lockdowns. Here's Chantel.
It was very challenging within this particular institution because I believe we are currently the nation's or one of the top largest prisons within the world. And so it's very big for a women's institution specifically, not in comparison to men's. We have three separate yards. And within those three separate yards, we can't really intermix. Like, I'm not allowed on another yard.
The yards are named alphabetically. During the time that they were planning the show, Tamikia was in C as in Charlie Yard, while Chantel was in B as in Bravo Yard. When the project kicked off, they were in the same yard, but then later got moved to different ones. So they used a go-between, but not a person. It was a notebook, one of those lined composition journals I remember from school.
Tamika and I came up with a wonderful plan of a notebook that we can pass around. So when you go to education or medical or the law library or wherever we go where we know we can meet up, we can pass the notebook and say, can you get this to so-and-so? Can you get this to the next unit? And then people, it's like a prison culture to say, like, can you pass this notebook or can you pass this letter to somebody? That it's pretty common to do that. That is one tool that we use to overcome the barrier of being separated, being on quarantine, and having limited access to one another.
The notebook included a description of the project and a list of potential artists that grew as the notebook made its way around the prison.
It took a lot of effort to coordinate between Tamika and I to get that notebook between the yards. We would meet on main yard at the law library and be able to switch it off there and pass it around. And sometimes it was definitely during COVID, so we had to wait a few weeks at times.
Chantel explains their strategy through a phone call. Halfway through, you'll hear an automated voice break in. It's just one reminder of the many limitations on communications inside prisons.
So because of the COVID quarantines and the limited networking and person skills, we had to do a little more of by word. So, you know, by word of mouth, through the grapevine, like, do you know any...
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
And we kind of had a trust on reputation.
Then, once the artists were selected, Chantel and Tamikia worked with them to produce their pieces. Here's Tamikia again.
I offered them art supplies. I helped them write their biographies, artist statements, art descriptions, and I broke down the value of their pieces, teaching them how to evaluate them.
Prisons, jails, and detention centers are built on the logic of confinement, of surveillance, and of erasure from public life. And that means the voices of people who are incarcerated are routinely censored, even though they are the only ones who can really speak to the human impacts of incarceration. Chantel also made work for the show. One really stood out to me. Letter to My Bed features a poem painted onto a bedsheet with images of a tree, moon, and sun.
And I actually wrote the letter on an actual sheet. It is a PIA, and that's Prison Industry Authority sheet that we are all issued when we come into the prison. We each get two sheets, a pillowcase, and the basics.
The California Prison Industry Authority sheets are made by incarcerated people and distributed inside prisons for them to use.
And in the prison, in this particular prison, they put eight women in one room, which is about 18 by 18 feet, square feet. So it's not a lot of space. Your bunk space is really where we live, cook, do our homework, our study time, our meditations, our reflection. And with the other people in the room, the only way you can feel like you're alone is by hanging up a sheet, either clipping it up or tying a shoelace from one end of the bunk post to the other end and hang your sheet over it. So I wrote a letter thanking the sheet for the privacy and the solitude that it gives me with the illusion of separating myself in my own little space from everyone else.
Chantel then painted the words and images onto the sheet with a paintbrush, working with a paperclip for the finest lines. She then used a hairdryer to heat set the paint so the sheet could be washed. Here's an excerpt from that poem in her own voice.
I am utmost grateful for the illusion of privacy that you provide when I hang my sheet across your line. You have been my only resource for healing the abundance of scars within and without. It is only here where I can close my eyes and be the mother I was meant to be, where I can hold her again, laugh and play with my family. I can release all the tears felt from grief through the years. Time has no meaning other than knowing the world outside continues without me.
As curators of The Only Door I Can Open, Chantel and Tamikia were supported by the organization Empowerment Avenue. I first heard about Empowerment Avenue through their projects to help writers who are incarcerated get their work published. The organization's executive director is Rahsaan New York Thomas. You might have heard him as a host on the award-winning podcast Ear Hustle.
This program got started because I needed it. I was in prison and I was writing about what I was witnessing. I became a person who was working for the newsroom, writing articles for San Quentin News. I became a co-host of Ear Hustle, and I also got involved in making documentary films, but I needed more. I felt like the economic piece was missing, and I felt like at a certain point I was just preaching to the same people, preaching to the choir, and so I longed to get my voice past the choir into bigger ponds and to like get economically compensated for it. And at the same time, I was watching the artists around me give their art away to nonprofits. So economic empowerment was critical. And so Empowerment Avenue started as a concept that I saw was necessary because as a writer, I only got 8 stories published in 7 years and only made $400 on my own. But meanwhile, it was a guy I was incarcerated with. He had made a connection with an editor at a magazine who not only hired him to be a columnist, but acted as a person who would help him pitch his stories to other organizations. And he was getting published left and right. And I was like, man, not only do I need somebody like that, everybody needs somebody like that if you're a writer and you're incarcerated.
Editors who are willing to work with writers inside prisons provide really crucial access to platforms that are otherwise denied to them. And Empowerment Avenue tries to facilitate relationships that get incarcerated artists and writers published and paid. Rahsaan was an interesting person to talk to for this story because he's also worked as an art curator. That's during his time inside San Quentin.
First of all, I started out like not knowing how to curate anything, but just knowing that certain artwork was beautiful to me and wanting to share that artwork, what I saw with the world.
So Rahsaan knows firsthand about the challenges that Chantel and Tamikia went through. And just like them, he had to learn how to manage time. Things sometimes take longer in prison, like longer than you think, especially during the height of COVID lockdowns.
I kind of plan for it. Like, I know that prison's going lockdown, so I can't wait till the last minute. You have to work ahead of time and not behind and make it happen. I think the most interesting part for me is as a curator for the first time, I'm asking people to give me their artwork in January, in December, in November for a show that's basically almost a year away, 9-10 months away. And so they have to trust my vision, right? They have to believe in me. And so having those relationships with all these guys in place was really key. And I'm honored that they did trust me. They all gave me their artwork. Then everybody in that exhibit made $600 off the top. And so I'm really proud of that, that we were able to do that and set a new trend. Like normally when you're in a museum, all you get is exposure. This time we got the guys paid.
Rahsaan took what he had learned and wrote a guide to share with Chantel and Tamikia as they prepared to curate The Only Door I Can Open. It was just one way that he and his colleague, Christine Lashaw, director of visual arts for Liberation, supported them.
From start to finish, it was a lot of teamwork, a lot of communication, a lot of letter writing, and a lot of phone calls. This is the first exhibit I have ever curated or co-curated. Honestly, this project, this whole exhibit would not be possible without the collaborative teamwork and open line of communication that Tamika and I both had with Empowerment Avenue. And I always felt like I was included, like my voice was being heard. And we moved into the actual production days. They did a video visit with me where I could see the actual art space, the museum space. I got videograms of the dance production. Like, it was so thorough and so professional. It exceeded all my expectations.
For Rahsaan, it was especially important to uplift the voices of incarcerated women. Incarceration impacts the over 190,000 women and girls currently held in prisons, jails, and correctional and detention centers in the United States differently than it does men.
I feel like women are not given the honor and respect that they deserve in this world in general. And incarcerated women, forget about it. For example, the men's prison has access to all its art supplies and a thriving art program. And the women's prison did not have that. And they're the fastest growing prison population. And Chowchilla is one of the, if not the biggest, women's facility in the country, if not the world. And so we need to shine some light on how things are done there and what needs to be improved.
In fact, the Prison Policy Initiative says that, quote, women in prison are worse off than men, both leading up to and during their incarceration. And that's troubling because the number of women being incarcerated is rising at double the rate of men. And the thing is, we don't really know why that is, because the data is inconsistent or incomplete. And gender-based violence definitely plays a role. Women are often incarcerated for fighting back against their abusers. Incarcerated women are three times as likely as men to be sexually abused by prison or jail staff. And that's for women across the board, without slicing it down even further into women of color and queer and trans women. Prisons and other carceral institutions are dehumanizing, but art can push against that. It can remind us of the brutality, punishment, and control inherent to prisons, and instead help us imagine communities that are built on care. Care that acknowledges our humanity, like healthcare for everyone, and education and housing. And having a bed that's not in a cage. Here's Chantel.
So the thing that's really important that I hope people get as this exhibit is to see the humanity and individuality of women incarcerated. Having that artistic platform to speak up and be heard, that is invaluable to me. It's just so precious and important for each one of us to be able to speak up and be heard and seen as the mothers, daughters, sisters that we are, not what the media portrays people incarcerated to be.
The only door I can open, and if I give you my sorrows, are collaborations between Flyaway Productions, Empowerment Avenue, and the Museum of the African Diaspora. The music you heard in this episode was composed for If I Give You My Sorrows, and the album is available for purchase online. We'll have links to all those and more at focmedia.org. Big thanks to Christine Lashaw from Empowerment Avenue for recording interviews with Chantel and Tamikia. And that does it for today's show. I'm Lucy Kang. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. 3 years ago, Nicole Kellner was working for a climate tech company and feeling burned out. To relax, she challenged herself to paint a watercolor each day for 100 days.
And they were just meant to be relaxing activities after work, but it turned into me painting about climate change solutions.
When she shared her paintings online, they went viral. And 4 months after picking up a paintbrush, Kellner quit her job to make climate art full-time. Many of her paintings help explain climate solutions. She's diagrammed how ground source heat pumps work, illustrated a poster of vegetarian